Matthew Boyer, once upon a time, was one of the biggest bookies in the world. He's got a brand new book out. It's called Recalibrate. And there's no doubt that he has one of the most interesting lives that I have ever read about, listened to interviews from. And he's nice enough to join us. Now, Matthew, before we get into the book and your life and everything that's going on, how bad a beat was that Dallas Cowboys over last night to have 41 and a half and not go over? That's disgusting.
That's an understatement. I've been in many positions where I've seen 0 points scored in the second half or first half, and, man, you think you have what we call a lock or a guarantee, and that proves that there never is one of those.
No question about it, especially in the soft markets like the NFL. All right, you have a book. It's at Amazon. It's called Recalibrate. And for those that may not know your story, I don't even want to simplify it to this, but it's how most people would know you, is you were taking bets from Shohei Ohtani's interpreter, Ipe Mizuhara. And that's not the only person you were taking bets from, obviously. But when you sit down to write a book like this, how do you possibly know where to begin?
Truth be told, I've never wrote a book in my life, and it was actually very therapeutic to put your life out. In fact, every person I speak to, regardless of how powerful or what your story is, I recommend everybody to do it because it's amazing. But where I started was from the beginning, from when my life changed, when 29 federal agents raided my home with guns and I was putting my son in my wife's car. That was a very drastic change, clearly, in my life. And it was probably the best and worst day I've ever had in my life to this point.
So I guess, again, there's so much to dive into. When did you building out this network of people that are betting? And obviously, you're not the only person that's doing this. You just were the biggest. But when you're building out this network, like, when, if at all, does it strike you that, hey, like, they might someday come after me? They made is that a thought? Is that a concern? Do you wipe it, write it off as, they got bigger fish to fry? Like, just take me through your mentality as it relates to what you were doing day in and day out and the threat of this happening one day.
Yeah, truth be told, when I was young, I was clearly betting sports myself with bookmakers, and I always have the bug. I love sports. I love betting. Gambling is the two biggest combination for me. So as I continued to lose money as a degenerate gambler to bookmakers, I said to myself, you know what, why don't I just start taking bets too? It's going to feed my personal losses. And then that transpired to be a bigger every year, and it eventually became a business. And what I realized was all of a sudden I was a bookmaker. It just kind of happened. And as I grew and got bigger, then I realized not only is this a lucrative business, but it's something I love doing. And the sad part of it, it's illegal. And so you start thinking about the consequences a little bit. But I was a young guy with a couple kids and truly was just doing it for fun. Now, fast forward to when I'm about 30, that's when it became a very serious business. And I actually just started dropping everything I was doing. I was a commodity trader on a very high level. I owned a boat dealership and all kinds of different businesses. And none of them really had the passion that I had for bookmaking. So as I dove into that business more and more, it started growing as I got big tycoon entrepreneurs, celebrities, athletes, et cetera. And the more I did that, the more, volume I created. So therefore the profit margin got higher. And at the same time, so did my own gambling addiction and Las Vegas casinos and trips around the world. And, they lure you in with all these extravagant, trips, et cetera. So as I did that, I got more gambling myself. And to answer your question, the whole time in the back of my mind, I was like wondering, am I ever going to get in trouble for this? I wasn't hurting people. I was paying taxes, but clearly not the right amount. And I had to make a decision. What's the best way to handle this moving forward? And so I just started paying extra amount in taxes and made sure that I never threatened or harmed anyone, because those are the things that people get in trouble for. And as I continued to build my business, I really made a decision that when people did owe me money and didn't pay or tried not to pay, that rather than threatening them or going after them, I really just looked in the mirror and decided it's my fault. I didn't vet the customer. I didn't do my homework, or maybe my agent didn't. And I just tried to learn from every experience as I grew. And that really helped me from making any more poor choices or doing something drastic when it comes to collections. So I think that kept me out of the way of the law. But in 2014, I was wrong. The federal agents raided my home, and that was the first time I had an encounter with the federal agents. And they took just under $1 million out of my house, and they made a deal with me. And it's a deal that to this day I kind of regret, because I had an opportunity to make a drastic change in my life, and I went the wrong way. But anyway, the deal was you sign an abandonment form, which states that I will not get an attorney. They will confiscate all the money, take my electronic devices, run it through their program, and give them back to me, and I can go on my own way. So I did that, and instead of being smart and going back to legal business and writing off the fact that I just got away with being a bookmaker for many, many years and et cetera, I decided to triple down and build my business 5 times bigger than what it was. And that caught up to me again, October 5th, 2023, when they came back. And this time, this time they weren't coming for abandonment form. They were coming for blood. And rightfully so, because I didn't learn my lesson.
Matthew, as all of that is blowing up, I mean, and John's right. I mean, we got 1,000 questions we can ask you. But as the success is coming and you're, you know, the Rolodex and your client, it's growing and you've got all these celebrities and you've got your own addiction. The other side of that, I mean, you're a father too. And so that balancing that part of it, because, you know, being present for them, I'm trying to figure out how you handled that part of your life or, you know, were able to maintain that in any form when you had so much going on in terms of this explosion in your, you know, in your career, in your lifestyle.
Yeah, you know, that was probably the biggest juggle is, I explain it to people like this. You walk in the home and you leave your work at the door. And, of course, I wasn't, because I was still watching sports,
right,
and handling my business, my phone. But I tried to maintain still being a great father and a great husband as best I could. But it was a double-edged sword because, you know, there was apparent risk, of course. Like, we could have been robbed or had something bad happen, you know, doing an illegal business, dealing with some people that, you know, could lose money and things can go sideways. And being a father of 5, I mean, my job is to provide and protect first and foremost. Yep. And for the first time in my life, I have to own it. I mean, the guilt of going away to prison and leaving them behind is definitely going to weigh on me the rest of my life. I never foresaw getting to this. But to answer your question directly, that was an extreme juggle because, you know, most bookmakers, for the most part, are not really, you know, dads of 5
family
and going
guys,
going to volleyball games and things like that. So I think that's interesting about my character and my life is that's what I really was doing. I've never done drugs in my entire life. I've never even tried cocaine or done anything. And I drink alcohol a little bit here and there, but most of what I do was either being a father, being involved in my kid's life, or gambling, you know, personally going to Vegas or all across the country, Monte Carlo, Bahamas, you name it. I was everywhere. And those were my 2 passions.
We're talking to Matthew Boyer, has the brand new book out. It's called Recalibrate. It's available on Amazon. An amazing story and a lot of layers. Was Ipe Mizuhara the worst gambler you've ever seen?
By far. And I've seen many bad ones that were, you know, close calls. But the reason why he was so terrible really was because he was just betting, as you saw, over 19,000 wagers in literally only 18 months, which they equated that to 26 bets a day, but that's really wrong. It was much more than that because he was cut off many times for many months at a time because he couldn't pay and had to wait for a payment to come in, which I didn't realize until later why. I think it was waiting for the angels to make a wire to the account or a paycheck, if you call it. And so for maybe 2-3 weeks at a time, he wasn't sending money. And then once he reached his max, which was $24 million, I don't know why I chose that as finally capping him because it was just getting so out of control. But I had to draw a line somewhere. And when he didn't send the money, I wouldn't let him play. And so what I'm getting at is he really is betting 50, 60 bets in a day when he was actually gambling. And we all know that the juice overcomes, you know, 50, 60 wagers in a day. It's really difficult to beat unless you're sharp and running robots and algorithms and all kinds of things. And he clearly wasn't doing that. A lot of parlays, a lot of soccer bets. In fact, 80% of the bets were soccer from countries I've never heard of in my life. And he was really bad, which he joked about. I didn't ask many questions because he made fun of himself in a lighthearted manner. and I had no idea that he was stealing money, or, you know, that Shohei wasn't knowing what was going on. That's something I didn't know until which transpired at the very end.
When I have to imagine that he, you know, is the best customer you ever had. Like, when you're seeing this happen, I don't know how long he was with you, but when you're just seeing somebody be this terrible, I mean, it must feel like you've found gold. It must feel like you discovered some rare gemstone. Like, to have this guy just do, and paying for the most part. Like, how did you sort of balance, like, okay, like, this guy is so bad morally. It's like, but it's just an endless supply of money for you.
Yeah, the third wire, when he sent the first wire for $300,000, the second one was $500,000, the third one's also $500,000. And to be honest, because I've been debanked at every bank in the country, the wires weren't going to me directly. So I didn't even know it was Shohei Ohtani was sending the money, or his bank account was, I should say, until the third wire transfer came. And that was the first holy cow moment for me, because clearly I didn't know Shohei Ohtani was the one bankrolling this, or his bank account. And the moment that happened, I knew that was good and bad. I mean, bad in reference to clearly I have the biggest baseball player / athlete in the history of sports betting on my website. And then the second part of that is clearly I now have an endless supply of money available. And at the time, he was already down $2 or $3 million on top of what he's already sent me. So, of course, I saw the greed in me, saw dollar signs. I mean, you know, I was running a business, and that was first and foremost. The second thing I thought was, you know, how do I handle this? Do I ask? Do I just let it go? And I chose not to ask because clearly he was paying, and I was providing a service, and he was very happy with it, clearly, as far as he kept going. But let's be honest, I had no idea that it was going to get to the level it did. And I thought maybe he'd lose another million or two and just stop and make payments or shut it down. He just kept asking for more and more and kept paying and paying. So, of course, you know, no one's going to deny $500,000 wires every 2 weeks.
That's what, and I don't correct me. I mean, at any point you think, okay, this might be Shohei. You know, does that come into it at any point?
Oh, absolutely. I thought it was Shohei. I for sure. I thought either it was Shohei or they were partnering in the account, which I've done with many people in my life, or maybe they're just both betting in the account. I went through a million different scenarios, and I definitely thought it was Shohei Ohtani, clearly.
How did you, and something else I read about you, and I don't want to get too far off topic, but it's a part of the, hopefully a part of the book and a part of your life, obviously. But at one point, you're taking bets from Pete Rose, and you cut off Charlie Hustle at one point. How did all that start, and tell us that story?
Charlie Hustle was amazing. I was very young when I met him. I think I was like 28 years old at the time. I met him at the Palms Hotel Sportsbook. He was in there betting races. He loved horses. And when I was introduced to him from a buddy of mine named Walt, Walt had a relationship with him. He was an agent for me. And we gave him a little account, actually. It was really small. And he was betting like $200-$300 on horses all day long. And he really was a bad gambler as well, because horses are so tough to beat. And he just loved the horses. He was betting a little bit of baseball and stuff like that. Clearly, he was already retired and out of the league after what happened. But he was signing autographs at Caesars and a couple spots for some side money. And he just loved to gamble. And he was the kindest guy. I truly loved him. And we ended up cutting him off because he was losing all his autograph money, and he really, sadly, didn't have much money at the time. And after his career, which was really sad considering what he did, and I still believe this day he should be in the Hall of Fame, but he 100% was honorable and did everything. It's just he kept jamming himself up, and Walt actually told him, Pete, maybe we should just shut this thing down and just play your little bit of money that you have, because he was getting behind. He wasn't able to pay on time, you know, waiting for money to come in from autographs. And We really liked the guy so much, we just kind of nicely told him maybe we should cut this off.
Yeah, how about that? So
unbelievable.
You are to report to prison next month?
Yeah, October 10th is my surrender date at this moment.
Gotcha.
Waiting to be designated to Lompoc. I hope that's where I go, because it'll be closer for my wife to come see me and my kids. At this point, it takes a little while for the Bureau of Prisons to you know, locate you a bed, et cetera. And so that's what I'm waiting on. I'm hoping that'll be the case.
So how do you just reconcile, like, this, you know, you have this time between you report, right? I mean, is it something that that you think about every minute of the day? Like, how do you sort of just – obviously, you know, you've been doing some interviews. Maybe that helps, but –
It's self-soothing to tell your story and be busy, to keep your mind off the reality of what's coming. But I'm a realist. I have five kids to feed. I used to make $1 million a month, and I no longer make that kind of money, and I have to take care of my responsibilities and pay back the government and taxes and do the right thing with that, and along with make sure my kids still go to school and are fed. And so those are my obligations, and I put myself in this predicament. I need to be accountable for everything I do. And I really want to teach that to my kids and truly the world. And we all make mistakes, since, you know, there's one bad chapter in a book, but it doesn't define who you are. And I'm really trying to prove that to myself and everybody around me. And to do that, I have to have a really strong mindset. So when I don't sleep much, about 3 hours a night, I jump in my infrared sauna for about 45 minutes and then my cold plunge. Those are my me times to the poor me and the kind of pump myself up and tell myself, you know, you're strong, you got this. And I have my weak moments, of course. I mean, reporting to federal prison with five kids is definitely on my mind every day. There's no question.
You know, the thing about, as you know, because you've been on both sides of it. The thing about gambling is that even if you're good at it, even if you're sharp, the risk of ruin is just it's omnipresent. Like any day could be the day, right, where you lose
right.
it all. And again, that's even if you're really good at what you do. What would be sort of, you know, as it relates to a relationship with betting, with gambling, what would be your message to people, you know, when you take that into consideration, the risk of ruin and how in one day it can all go to zero?
Well, here's the problem with gambling. No matter who you are, how good you are at it, the discipline is so hard to stick with at all times. We all have a moment where an oh shit moment of like, you know, you lost three in a row and you just feel like you can't lose the fourth game and you want to bet five times that amount to get it all back. Those are the little things that come into your head that you have to fight. And unless you're continuing to stick with, you know, units and making sure you're betting things that aren't just because they're on TV, I would say discipline is the biggest key factor for people who are successful at gambling as opposed to the ones that are not. And anyone listening to this understands that. And to be honest, even if you're not running a sharp program and robots and algorithms and all that stuff, I mean, I would just recommend to anyone gambling that you have to use momentum as something for someone who's not educated. So if you've lost two or three in a row, you're more than likely going to lose the fourth game or fifth game. And most people don't understand that. And when you're winning two or three in a row, that's the time you should be betting bigger because you whether it's the reason for why it's happening, the bottom line is that you tend to be much more educated or better at handicapping when your mind frame is strong and when you're actually seeing things better. And it's no different in gambling. You have to think about that. And when you start chasing, the odds of you winning become tenfold worse. There's no question.
Matthew, I know it's a personal question. I think it can be extremely, you know, instructive, though, as it relates to your kids, right, and whether or not they gamble and whether you would, if, with everything that you've been through, like John said, and you just answered it, you know, you have to be disciplined. But when it comes to them, it's kind of like a football player and you ask him, do you want your kids to play? Because he understands how violent the game is and as accessible as it is now. You know, our kids are raised, they're scrolling their phones already, and now we've got these built-in sort of casinos, sports books in our pocket. Are you comfortable? Are you telling them, yeah, go ahead and do it. Just be disciplined. Here's how you do it. Here's where I messed up. Are you saying, no, don't even open that box in terms of your own kids and what you tell them?
Well, clearly the genetic gene in my family it has addiction. My dad died very young at 55 from alcoholism. My little brother just got out of prison for doing drugs. Clearly I have a gambling addiction that I'm dealing with and going to prison. So the message to them is to be ultra careful of anything they do that has addiction, whether it's drugs, alcohol, or gambling, or anything for that matter. Social media can be addicting. So I try to teach them that, knowing that you have that gene pool, we need to be extra cautious. But I've gambled with all of my kids. The older ones, 30, 26, 22, they've all gambled with me. But, you know, they're girls, and they've done it on a level of going to the dice and betting $5, $10 and never, thank God, have gone down the path I have. I more worry about my four-year-old son because he's a lot like me, and he's a male. Not saying that women don't gamble, they do. But males more, in my opinion, gamble more than women. And I say that because he's sports. He loves all these things already. And he has my personality, which is kind of, you know, going to go for the throat and try to, you know, appease everybody and bet more than anyone once he starts gambling. So I'm going to watch him more than anyone. But I would like him not to, of course. If I could sway him away from it, that would be great. But I assure you, he won't be a bookmaker, and I definitely will make sure he doesn't follow my path. But I do worry about the current epidemic that is happening that's really not being shown yet.
Yes.
These young kids are truly being adverse to watching LeBron James, Kevin Hart, Jamie Foxx on TV commercials and condoning and promoting gambling, which I understand why, because they're getting paid for it. And so is every league and, you know, NFL, NBA, you name it. They're all condoning it. And the problem is these young kids don't have the brain power to develop and realize they have a gambling problem already. Mm. And they're betting such small amounts, it doesn't seem to be right. affecting their lives. You know, it's $20, $30. But let's fast forward to 7 years from now when they're 30 and they have a baby and they have a mortgage. And now they're betting $500 a game. And now all of a sudden they can't pay the mortgage. And then now they have a destructive problem with their wife or kid. And that's what's coming. And I worry about that drastically, which I plan on helping a lot of people, motivating, you know, speaking, obviously giving back, because I've seen it. I've been part of it. I've made money off people in these positions. I want to be clear. So I understand. And at the end of the day, I would love to help and promote people from going down that path.
Yeah, I was going to ask and just kind of end on that. I mean, obviously you report, you know, next month when your year is up. What do you hope life for Matthew Boyer looks like?
You know, I don't hope. I know that my life's going to be amazing because I'm ultra confident in who I am and what I do and everything I touch. I know how to make money. I know how to produce. And now I'm doing something where both people win for the first time in my life. Usually I need somebody to lose, you know, as a bookmaker or as a commodity trader. It was very difficult, you know, commissions and all these things to overcome for me to make money. This is the first time where I may be on a stage promoting somebody from how to educate them on gambling better or quit gambling or stop gambling or promote mindset so that they can overcome adversity in their life in any format. And so when they walk away from meeting me, I hope that they learn and educate themselves to be a better human being. So I win, they win. And if I get paid to do that, then I'm not even working. And that's to be the first time in my life I could say that.
The book is Recalibrate, Matthew Boyer. Man, this was really, really good stuff. And we wish you the best of luck. And hopefully we can touch base down the road, man. Thank you for the time.
This, Matthew.
Thank you, guys. I hope to be on the show here in about 8-9 months. I think I'm going to do everything in my power to get out early.
Yes.
And I want to show everybody, including the world, what I'm capable of. So thanks for having me today. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, Matthew. Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks for your time, guys.
Yep.
Appreciate it.
Pleasure.
He is Matthew Boyer, again, the author of Recalibrate.